This is July 25th, and there is no Albuquerque meeting this month, so the following tape contains excerpts from a one-day intensive held in Sacramento, California, on February 20th. The next regularly scheduled meeting in Albuquerque will be August 22nd, 1993.
Most of you live very intense lives where things are always in motion around you, and although you are not aware of it, tremendous demands are being made on the cells of the body. Tremendous cellular demands. Much of the physical deterioration of the body form comes not so much, you know, this wonderful word, the catch-all phrase is, well, stress is the problem. Well, if we look deeply at stress from a spiritual, in quotes, point of view, what do we discover? We discover that stress means there is something pushing on the psyche that is the vastness of you, that is your mental, emotional, and physical wholeness. Some energies are pushing upon you that are giving the cells a message that is other than it's safe to relax and expand. The cells are waiting for the message that says it is safe to relax and expand. Now stop and think about, let's go back to your question, lovely one, about moving in the world and feeling an increase in anxiety. All right, when you turn on the universal mandala of the television, you see without question there is anxiety going on in much of the world, whatever your own particular situation might be. Now, you do not have to turn on the television to begin to experience the incredible pressure that we will choose to call a psychic pressure that is pulsating against the physical bodies. Now, those of you that live in places like California, you have added new spin to the ball. Because not only, of course, do you have all the natural ones, but now, I mean, meaning your sociological and financial and economic stress, but now you add the earth changes. So now, you see, so Californians have a real spin on the ball. Because you have to worry about, well, you know, is my country going to separate? Am I going to be an island rather than a continent? And, you know, you can go on endlessly, and we can play that game. But in the end, you see, in the end, you must realize that this mysterious thing called stress is something that's very obvious from a spiritual point of view, and, if I might be so bold, has a very obvious solution. So let us talk about the solution, because I think that's, we all know, if your own body is under stress, if you're paying attention. So let's start with the basic approach to this. Most people, when they find that their lives are under stress, they try to eliminate what they consider to be the outward, please hear this word, the outward cause of their stress. So they move their relationships around, they move from place to place. They do various things. There's nothing wrong with those things. Move the pieces on the chessboard any way you wish. It is really, that's part of the fun of life, is to move things around. You move your furniture around, you move your lives around, you move the people in your life, your job gets in motion, and then the physical moving from here to here. Now, none of that is, there's nothing wrong with any of that. But in the end, one finds that not only does that often not decrease the stress, but it can, under certain circumstances, increase it. Because now you have, well, you know why. You have all the obvious reasons. Now, what then is the very simple way to work with this? I think it begins by the very careful and deep observation of the reality that it is not the outward circumstances that are the difficulty, but there is something that goes on between those circumstances outside oneself and something deeply within you. There is, in a coming together of these two seemingly separate action points, something that you experience as stressful. Now, the deepest student of this whole subject, the very deepest student, has to really stand on the position that says, If I am going to begin to mentally describe all of the things that are stressful in my life, I will be so inundated that I will never get out of bed in the morning. If you begin to carefully decide, well, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this, all of these outside, the fears then begin to arise. And as the fears begin to arise, there happens this strange thing happens to the human, which is, well, I can't do anything about all of that. It's all out of my control. It's got nothing to do with me. And then this funny little idea, well, I'll just hang on till I die. I'll just hang on here in the moment somehow, and then hopefully I'll die, and when I die, well, then, you know, all the good things will begin to happen. Well, the game was set up so the good things could happen here and now, exactly as you are now, and strangely enough, exactly as the world is now. You see, my friends, the idea that this world is going to arrange itself into a perfection pattern so that you can enjoy it is nonsense, and you know it. Do you really think that this planet is going to arrange itself into a perfection so that you can then enjoy it? Do you think, on the other hand, that God, whatever that might be, is some kind of an alien force that sent you down here to suffer? And now that you're here, are you suffering? Well, then, if that is not true, if the idea is not to suffer, 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 and if the idea is that perfection is not here, then what are you doing here? What are you doing here? Because you are here. You know, you may say a lot of things like, why am I here? But you're here. And that is undeniable. So, let us state the simplest, which is you are here. You don't really have any idea of why. Now, you can pretend, oh, I am here too. Well, whatever. We can make up a lot of stories. And they may be true. You may have come. You know, many people come to me and they say, my job in this life is to learn to love more. And I say, probably. But I think that's a universal job. Remember, we've said this before. Those of you who have been with this work, please pardon the repetition, but some are brand new. So we need to bring some new. Remember, the knowledge that when you die, whatever that might be, they ask two questions. How much have you learned and how much have you loved? And they don't care about your bank account. They don't care about any of that. Two things. How much have you learned and how much have you loved? Now, what do they mean by learned? Someone said to me when that statement was made, I have as many university degrees as I ever hope to have. And that isn't what they have in mind. So what do they have in mind? All right, the learning process is what we're talking about this morning, which is learning how. Do you remember that wonderful title of Hugh Prather's book? I strongly recommend it. How to Live in the World and Still Be Happy. Listen to the title. How to Live in the World and Still Be Happy. This is a marvelous man with a tremendous humor and a lot of insight. And it is a grand text for living in the world and learning to be happy. It's based on The Course in Miracles, but he's taken it, I think, to a marvelously wonderful degree. Now, you are here, your life is. All of these circumstances create the moment. And the only question that I think they really want you to pay attention to is, what is happening in this moment, just in this moment? 95% of the stress that you put on yourself has absolutely nothing to do with this moment. It has to do with the next hour, the next day, the next week, the next year, and some of you, the next lifetime. I've had people come to me and say, I just have this terrible fear that I'm going to reincarnate. They haven't even finished this life, and they're terrified about the next life. And I say, hang on, hang on. Let's get through this one first before we start worrying about the next one. You see, it's this kind of thing. Well, that taken as an extreme is what causes so much of the dilemma now. For example, let's talk about the financial question, because it is a large one. Now, if you want to frighten yourself to death, you can begin to spin all kinds of formula, economic and other, out there, whereas you will find that you, not only if you had any money, you will be terrified of losing it. If you don't have enough, you'll be terrified that you won't get any more. You see, and it's all unreal, in the sense that, I don't say that things don't happen, but in the sense that the minute you take yourself out of this moment and out of the reality that is happening to you, you begin to play into the basic drama, which is the fear game. The human consciousness is not blissful because it is always in a state of fear. And the state of fear is rarely, rarely, rarely based on now. It is almost always based on a probable tomorrow, on a probable next minute, on a probable next year. And in reality, my friends, they don't happen. They don't happen. Now you say, but bad things do happen. And I say, yes, but if you are watching carefully to the people that these bad things happen to, what do we find? Let us say that you've spent a lot of years worrying about getting a particular illness because, you see, you believe in heredity. Now, I don't. You do. Most of you believe in heredity. So that means that if parents have this, then your probability of having this is probable. I say, if you believe it, that's your problem. Because I don't believe it. I do not believe it. I believe that the mindset and the belief inside of you is what determines to what degree you are subject to the past of your parents. There is nothing in the DNA that demands that you respond. Nothing. Now, when you begin to talk to people about it on that level, I begin to lose their confidence. They say, well, how can you not believe in heredity and so forth? From the largest point of view, my friends, it's not true. And when you begin to realize that that might not be true, that it is possible to live a life free of the past, free of the beliefs and the ideas and the physical motivations and the fears of the past, life begins to become exciting. Fear is most of the time not in the present. It is either in the past and you've hauled it into the present, or it's in the future and you've hauled it into the present and then respond to it. And it is not real. This moment is the only moment that is real. There isn't any other moment. And when you begin to realize that the degree of your happiness totally rests on your ability to relax into this moment exactly as it is, then you begin to be attracted to the energy fields that begin to loosen up your life and to begin to bring you the bliss. Now, I have stated, I think one of the things I say that makes people the most angry, so let's go ahead and do it. Yes, the most angry is this life, your moment, exactly as it is, contains bliss. It is not something you have to get, something you have to deserve, something that you have to get rid of something in order to do. None of that. I state absolutely, in fact, the entire body of this work for 14 years has stated, this is the truth on which we stand. In this moment, bliss is. Not for someone else, not in some euphoric future state, not if you were born an Indian and a Brahmin and a whatever, whatever. No. You say, then if that is so true, then how come I'm so unblissful? What is it then? Why am I unblissful? If bliss, you see, all the great ones, what do they say when they get enlightened? They say, your basic nature is bliss. I mean, Ramana even uses the word, please excuse this word, happiness. They all say it. Why do they ask you to pursue your true nature in Buddhism? Because it's miserable, but because your true nature is so incredibly filled with joy, filled with happiness, filled with bliss. Your basic nature is bliss. I wish that I could tell you this, and that would be the last we ever had to say to each other. That in this moment, without you having to get rid of anything, to bring anything into it, if you would just quietly and humor, full of humor, pursue the one idea that says, in this moment, bliss is fully present in me, and just shut up your mind. Did you hear that? Shut up your mind to such an extent that bliss would allow itself to be felt by you, we'd never have to bother to do these again. You have to decide. Either bliss is something you have to earn and go get and find and die for or live for or pray for or I don't know what for. You each have your own method. Or you dare to believe the great ones. Don't listen to this. Just take the great quotes from history of the great enlightened beings. What do they all say? It is here and now, ever present. You can't earn it. You can't get rid of it. It is. It is your true nature. It is your ever present nature. Then what stands between? Well, the first thing is you don't believe me. That's the basic problem. And the ones that have believed it, you know, you read in some of these wonderful stories that someone goes to a teacher and says, all right, tell me. And the teacher says, your basic nature is bliss. And they say, oh, thank you. And they go, oh, that's it. They go off and within a few years, they manifest the bliss. Ramana Maharshi, I mentioned him only because I think he's one of the great enlightened ones of your period in history so that you can, you don't have to find misquotes, you can't have, you know, you don't, he isn't old enough to have people misinterpret him yet. It will happen soon, believe me. The non-gospel according to Ramana Maharshi, very soon. But in any case, what does he say? The first thing he says to all of the ones who come to him is, your basic nature is bliss, is happiness, is pulsating, radiant joy and light and power. That's it. And a handful out of millions say, thank you, and go away and manifest it. But then there's the second level. And the second level says, well, some part of me believes that. Some part of me believes that. But how am I going to find it? That's the second level. It says how. Now the third level says you don't know what you're talking about. I'm never coming back. Goodbye. And this was a waste of my time. And then they start to do what we call pitter patter up the ladder, which is then you start and you practice this and you practice you do the health and you do the yoga and you do everything. And then finally you decide that you've suffered enough and pursued enough and been a seeker long enough that now you're ready to begin to feel your own bliss. So where do you place yourself? Most of you, I think, are second level. And the second level says, yes, look, as an idea, I think that's wonderful, and I believe it, but you have to show me how to get there. So then come the methods, the methodologies, all right? So what is the method then? If you don't believe the first statement, if you're not ready, you see, my hope in all these years of screaming, 14 years, is that more and more of you, now that you hear it again, will say, all right. Right, Charles? I'm ready. Now, without method, without idea, without belief, I am ready. Now, bliss is my true nature. Now, if you really get excited, even slightly excited by the idea that that bliss is already a condition of your natural state, then the simplicity of your day should be evident, which means that as many moments of the day as you possibly can, you keep remembering that. You don't say, oh, my basic nature is bliss, how do I find it? I ask you to drop off the last sentence. Do you understand? If you're saying, how do I find it, then we're still in the seeking mode. And remember, we've talked a lot about if you are a seeker, you are not going to be a finder, because a seeker is seeking, and a finder finds. And when you decide that you are going to stop using your brain to find this bliss, then you will begin to relax into the moment with the understanding, with the intention of feeling the bliss. And you are a doctor, is that not right? Now, there are hundreds and hundreds of moments every day when many of you are involved in very difficult lifestyle. Being a doctor is not a simple thing. Being any of these things is not a simple thing. Just worrying is not a very simple thing, you see? And then we have judgment. Who is it that wanted to get rid of judgment? Someone, well, that's easy, isn't it? Now, look, all of these, worry, judgment, fear, work, all of these things, they are the fabric of your lives. And the days where you can say, excuse me, but I'm just checking out of this life and I'm going to wander around with a bowl and everybody will feed me, we'll try it. You know, you end up in a on the street. They don't even take you into shelters anymore. There's too many. What the point here is, as you state deeply within yourself, my life doesn't have to change. I don't have to become different. I don't have to be employed in another way. I can continue to go out in the world or whatever. There is something about how I do my moment-to-moment living that is going to make the difference. And this is what I would say to you. How you do your moment-to-moment living is going to be the difference between bliss and fear and confusion. Judgment is not the problem. The mind's job is to judge. Now, look, there are two kinds of thinking. Let's be clear about thinking. Two kinds. There is what we will call necessary thinking, which is it is necessary to think where you're going and how you're going to do it and so on and so on. You know, doing your checkbook without thinking is stupid. You know, you have to apply the brain. So there are many things. But then the kind of thinking that we are talking about is what I would call emotional-based thinking that has nothing to do with anything that's going on, and you know exactly what I mean. The endless hours that you spend in your mind speculating on the possibilities of, well, maybe this and maybe, do you understand? Just on and on and on. Well, then there's this and then there's that and oh no, well, that, well, how about this and so about that? And if you, and it's all this speculative thinking, which is where the judgments come, because the mind weighs things one way or another. Now, the wonderful key is to find out the difference between these two kinds of thinking. Apply the creative one when it's appropriate, please. Please do so. But at the same time, to begin with humor, to watch the non-productive emotion. It's usually emotion-based. Do you know what I mean when I say that? It's the emotional-based thinking. You know, someone who is pondering how to create a fission machine that would work so you didn't have to use certain kinds of oils and gases. That's not emotional thinking. But there is emotional thinking, and as you begin to sense it in your life, if you're paying attention, you will begin to feel how emotional thinking feels to your cells. This is where the cells begin to contract. Emotional thinking contracts. Creative thinking expands. And if you want to test this, pay attention to your body before you begin a creative mode, whether it's artistic or scientific or political or whatever it might be, to watch how the tension in the body is. And then after you've had the excitement of your expansive creative thinking, go back to the cells. You will find them expanded. All thinking does not contract cells. Much of creative thinking expands them. It is what they love. They love to explore the possibility of a new creation. Creation loves ever-extending energy. It loves to extend into new, exciting motion. It loves that feeling. And that's creative energy, creative thinking. But emotional energy is the ones that go around and around in all the speculative possibilities. And watch your energy field and watch your cells. You will find yourself turning in like this. You will begin to have stomach aches, you'll begin to have headaches, you'll begin to have pain in the back of your neck. Your physical body will begin, what is this? Your physical body will begin to tell the story for you absolutely explicitly of what you are doing and the attack that you are putting yourself under all the time. I am saying this because it is the one way that you can begin today to release tremendous pressures on your life. And when you do this, you begin to move in another realm of creative awareness. Let me talk about that. When you begin to realize that you have to choose in every moment of thought to either worry about all these problems and problems and problems, Or you can remember this very simple statement that bliss is your basic nature. Your true nature is happiness. Your true nature is ebullient life and bubbling aliveness. That is your basic nature. And when you really listen to me or anyone and hear this, then you begin to look for it every moment. And you stop looking in your mind where you will not find it. You stop looking in your emotions where you will not find it. You begin not looking anywhere but just shutting up in the moment and allowing yourself to begin to experience this moment. Now, what do I mean by experience? Someone says, what do you mean by experience? Well, you are all aware, aren't you, that every moment of your life, that's all you're doing, isn't it? You are experiencing everything. You are experiencing this. Then you are experiencing that. You're experiencing thinking. You're experiencing breathing. You're experiencing pain. You're experiencing happiness. You're experiencing anxiety. Experiencing sleep. You're experiencing deep sleep. People say, I don't experience deep sleep. And I say, Bottom, when you wake up in the morning, do you say, I don't know if I was alive last night? He would never ask the question. You see, it never occurs to you. You wake up and you say, someone says, well, I don't know if I existed in deep sleep. I think, come on. Do you really doubt that you existed while you were asleep? Did you die and a brand new creation take place when you woke up this morning? Doesn't it look awfully familiar? Doesn't it all look terribly familiar? And don't you have some kind of an ongoing sense of being, not being anything? You see, the dream world dissolves. So there's no shape, there's no form. But you never doubt that somebody was in deep sleep. That is never a question. It is that state. I know, let's just reach as deep as we can. I'll never see some of you again, so I've got to say this. That deep awareness that you, when you come into body form again in the morning, cannot really remember all of, that deep state is constant. It runs through every moment of your life. It is the deepest part of your being. Now, your conscious awareness doesn't remember. But there is a part of you that absolutely knows that you were in a deep sleep state. And what do you say? Do you say, oh, I'm really so upset I slept very well last night? Did you have a good night? No, I had a terrible night. I slept well all night long. All of you know that one of the wonderful gifts of life is to sleep deeply, deeply, on deep levels where all of the surface of life dissolves. And you disengage, you remove from, you let go of, you turn your back on, you say enough, and you move into something else. And you do it every night of your life. And I have told you that without that deep sleep state, none of you would be able to maintain your lives. They have found that the best way to drive any human consciousness mad is to deprive them of sleep. And it is because when you are in deep sleep, you, if I could put it this way, you re-remember. You realign, you re-aliven, it's like submerging into the depths and remembering, ah, this is what my nature is. This is why we're doing this. And in that deepness, there comes a knowing, which the conscious mind doesn't have, of why all this living is going on in the first place. So you have people who have been in very difficult situations during the day. They go into the deep sleep. They wake up in the morning, and what do they say? All right, one more day. I'll do it one more day. Without that integration, you would go mad. Now, what is that? That deep, continuous something that has no name and form. And when people hear me say this, they become frightened because they are afraid that when they become enlightened, then they're not going to be able to remember it like they can't remember deep sleep. Do you hear what I'm saying? When I say to you, it's that state, you say, well, I don't like that state because I don't remember it. I can't see it. I can't feel it. I can't taste it and touch it. Now, may I just tell you, when you begin to drop into the moment with the intention of feeling your bliss and the joy and the essential exuberant life of the moment, you are going to be able to experience the simplistic bliss that is ever, ever alive. And you do it by stopping your thinking. Just move away from thought. You say, that's hard. It is not hard. You just have to do it. You just have to quietly choose to experience the moment. Now, I'd like for you, please, to shut your eyes. And I want you to notice what you're experiencing. Just please notice what it is that you're experiencing. So, what are some of the things one notices? Anyone at all, please?
Air.
Breath.
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 Flow.
Sorry? Silence.
Flow.
Flow. Anything else?
Relaxation.
Heartbeat. Relaxation. Heartbeat. I'm sorry? Peace and calm. Good. Tension.
Mm-hmm. My body. I feel very solid. Very conscious of the body.
Good. Anybody notice the birds? Don't forget the obvious. Smelling, hearing, feet on the ground, buttocks in the chair, stomach growling.
The lack of visual stimulation.
I'm sorry?
The lack of visual stimulation.
I'd like to comment on this for a moment because it's true for her, but it may not be true for everyone. There are two very definite differences in how one really focuses in the moment. This is why you have different traditions. For example, in Zen, you keep your eyes open when you meditate. Standard. In the Hindu faith, often you close them and focus on the third eye or on the right side of the heart or in Vipassana, on breath, or whatever it might be. Now, what I ask you to do for the rest of your life is for you to decide which way works best for you and not allow any method, any system to carry you. Many of you, when you are focusing, for example, in Zen, you focus just quietly with a soft gaze, you know, just a few feet in front of you. Many people find that eliminates a lot of stimulus. The same people find when they close their eyes, the whole inner world starts rising up and their ideas start coming in and they start thinking about this and thinking about that. So it very much depends on who you are. And as a method of meditation, please find out which one is right for you and stay with it. Because to make any rule is to distract from your own keen knowing of what's best for you. But it's essential because you're absolutely right. For some people, the external is a total story, a storyline. You know, you open your eyes, well, that's a nice blouse, and I like that, and I don't like that, and I do like that, and look at those cute shoes, and so on. I mean, endless, endless. Other people shut their eyes and the whole inner, oh, look at that, that's a cute idea, well, that's a bad idea, that's a really bad idea, and then, you know, how could I have that idea? You know, so it depends, but find out, and it is essential. And if you have been meditating for any length of time and don't know the difference between those two states, then I ask you to spend the next weeks finding out. It is essential, to have a sense of it. All right, now, let's go back to the moment.
I felt a big light inside, and then like all this music coming up now, that was experienced.
That's right.
Yes.
Now, good question, because something was experiencing the light. Something was experiencing the tears rising. Something was experiencing feeling the body. Something was experiencing hearing the birds. Something was experiencing all of that. And it is that first cause experiencing that we are talking about. It does not matter what the experiencer is choosing to experience, whether it be pleasing or displeasing, whether it be lofty or not. The job is not to just experience lofty things. The job is to become aware of what is experiencing all of it. Let me say clearly, where many people have spent endless lifetimes in the pursuit of awakening is right there. So let's talk about it. There is a tremendous, strong, pulsating approach that states you have got to move from bad thoughts, come in, bad thoughts, bad thinking, judgments, especially bad judgments, bad experiences, bad stories in the mind, all that. And what you have to do is move so that you have good thoughts, loving thoughts, beautiful thoughts. Have you tried that? Have you spent any time, I think they're getting cold again, my friend. Have you spent any length of time trying to move from bad thoughts to good thoughts? Have you spent any length of time trying to never have another negative thought, have only loving thoughts? Have you tried it? Because if you have, you will find that you have failed. And the reason that you failed is it can't be done. It cannot be done. You cannot move by your will from negative thoughts to positive thoughts. You can't do it. There will always be that 5%. Let's say you're one of the, thank you, one of the very fortunate that you get 95%. Well, what about the 5? You will dwell on those 5 forever. You see, you will forever dwell. You will never say, oh, well, 95% of the day, I was loving, compassionate, humorous, uplifting. You will remember, and your surroundings will be happy to point out, your 5%. They will say, thank you for the 95%. So this is lovely. I'll say, what about what you said to me yesterday? Mm. You see, because that is not the way enlightenment is experienced. And I know that I am making a statement that some of you might find religiously incorrect. Because many of the religions of the world try to move their followers from evil to good, from negative to positive. Now, I do not see anything wrong with that if that's the way you wish to live your life. I am addressing a handful of people on the face of this planet, and there are others who say it the same way, and if this isn't something you believe in, for heaven's sake, you may leave it break. What I'm saying is, that is not the way you come into a compassionate heart. The question was how to love. You do not come into a loving heart by trying to have good thoughts. You do not come into a loving, non-judgmental world by scolding yourself every time you have a judgmental thought. It takes something completely different. And let's go through it. It is so simple. Thoughts rise and fall. Judgments rise and fall. They change all the time.
You scold today, you embrace tomorrow. The next day you ignore. It goes endlessly, endlessly, endlessly. The world of form and shape rises and falls, rises and falls, rises and falls. The thing that gives the compassionate, radiant heart, which is what all of you want, is a radiant heart filled with the light and the wonder of loving. Not just loving one person, but just to move with a blissful, loving feeling in your being all the time. No matter what you're seeing, no matter who you're seeing, no matter what's happening to you, to have that feeling. Do you know that that love feeling just rise, the compassionate, wondrous warmth of that feeling? Now, it does not come from stopping judgment. It does not come from going around changing bad thoughts to good thoughts. It doesn't come by all of those methods. I'm sorry, but it really doesn't. The way it comes is when you learn each moment to move out of your thinking mind, which is polarized, out of your emotions, which are polarized, the pleasure and pain, and simply begin to experience this moment exactly as it is, with as little thought process in the moment as possible. And does it take practice? You bet. It's interesting to me that of all the words that they could have contrived to describe the last 14 years, they call it the Bartholomew work. You could call it the Bartholomew work. They don't call it the Bartholomew fun, the Bartholomew bliss. They call it the Bartholomew work, because it is work. And what do we mean? I don't mean work in the sense of you've got to get better, you've got to be good, you've got to be holy. In fact, most holy people are very boring. Someone who is very, very holy is usually very, very boring, because, you know, they are so afraid to do anything that they do very little. And therefore, they're very holy, because they're not trying to do very much, you know. So, but the excitement of the work comes by choosing as many moments as you can when you're not in the creative mode of thinking and acting, which you have to be, that you choose to rest in the moment without your brain going, without your fantasy, without all those ideas. Just pay attention to your breath. If you can't do anything else, just shut up and breathe. Just feel the breath moving in and out of the body, moment after moment after moment. Feel yourself sitting in a chair. You know, experience means sitting. You know, many people experience, but they forget they have a body sitting on a chair with feet. You begin to just experience the moment, the heat, the sound. You begin to pay attention to hearing. Not thinking about hearing, but just hearing and seeing and breathing. And it gets simpler and simpler and simpler and more exciting and more dynamic and more creative and more relaxing and more compassionate. The compassionate heart only comes when you know yourself to be so absolutely acceptable. You cannot be compassionate until you know you're acceptable. Do you understand? Do you really? Let's go through it again. You can pretend to be good. You can watch your speech so that you only speak well of people. Do I think you should go around speaking ill of people? Of course not. Of course not. But what? And is your compassionate speech match the feeling inside of you? Or are you saying, oh, what I should be saying is X. What I'm really feeling is Y. When you begin to watch, you will realize that you have trained yourselves to be good, to say the right things, to do the right things, to look in the right way. You have trained yourself. And you have estranged yourself so much through all of this conditioning that you have forgotten the basic truth, which is that under all that pretense is the most amazing love you've ever dreamed of, and you've missed it.
When you begin to silence down, you will begin to be compassionate, and you will not even know how and why. You will. It is just a state of being that begins to come out. It isn't that you create it. You know, thinking good thoughts doesn't create good feelings. If you don't feel good about yourself, you cannot have good feelings that are sincere about others. I'm sorry, but you can't. Not that deep knowing. The deep knowing, you see, compassion comes when you know something with your whole being. When you just move, when something moves across the screen of your vision and you find yourself melting, do you know that word? Just melting into some feeling inside. Love, when it comes from the compassion, is a melting. It just melts inside in a soft melting. And words can't do that. And ideas can't do that. Well, what can do that? That is the true nature. That is who you are. And when you quit thinking and scheming to be loving and scheming to be holy and scheming to be compassionate or humorous or whatever you're scheming to be, and just shut up and begin to be feeling the moment, then what happens rambunctiously is that begins to move inside of you. You're absolutely right. The light is present in you. Now, as you begin to be aware of that which is experiencing the light, then you're closer. Look, do you understand? Is this too far for you? Do you understand? You see, it's either we have to make a big struggle or we make it very easy. You know, if you just shut up and sit down in your moments, as many moments as you can, just the simplicity of this moment, of in a body, on the floor, in a chair, here are my hands, here are my feet, here's my breath, here's my ears, I'm hearing, I'm seeing, I'm breathing, whatever it is, moment after moment, without discussion about, oh, am I breathing right? My breathing is 100 to the minute, and so on. We're back to thinking. Just, you begin to train the slowdown. Now, some of you have been getting a message that says, slow down. Slow down. What is meant by that? I need to speak literally, because when you begin to take this approach to the moment seriously, meaning that you want to be in the moment as intensely as you can, as often as you can, you're going to have to slow down in the physical sense. Now, that doesn't mean you have to quit half your job. Well, what it does mean is you have to start moving slower. Your physical body has to begin to move slower. Do you understand? You have to slow the machine down. You will walk with more awareness, which means slower. You will begin to speak with more awareness, which means slower. You will begin to live every moment of your life with a different sense of deliberation, so that you do every moment with awareness. And the result is your life slows down. Now you say, that's boring. That's boring. I like my life at the hum at which it's going. Would you give yourself a year to practice this and find out if that's true? Because the momentum that the physical machinery, you see, many of you, excuse me for saying this, are living off of the hum of the physical machinery, and you think that's living. You see, people who have very active lives do it because they really think that that's what life is. You know, all this moving around and this huffing and this puffing and this going from this to that, and I'm a this and I'm a that, and I'm a creative this and I do this, and that's, and they think that's life. Well, that's not life. That's action. And I want to tell you, please don't be insulted. Most of you have substituted action for what you should be calling God life. The feeling of being a body in motion is not the same feeling as life. And life, that exuberant bliss, that joy, that happiness that we said is the nature of the moment, is begun to be felt in small tastes, and then you begin to understand that you have really substituted action, mental action, emotional action. You know, people come to me and they say, I don't like all this drama in my life, and I just laugh. I said, oh, yes, you do. Oh, yes, you do. Because, how do you know? Someone says, well, I'll take it away. Oh, no, I'm not quite finished. I haven't learned everything I need to learn. Endlessly I hear this. I haven't learned everything I need to learn. It's that wonderful, I hope I get it right, saint, one of the saints said, Augustine says, oh, God, he had a great desire for the feminine. And he liked to make love as the... And he says to God, oh God, take this affliction from me, but not yet. You're in the same boat. You like the drama. Why? Because you are all sadists and sadists. How do you pronounce that word? Enjoying negative attributes? No. It is because somehow you've confused that drama of the emotions, the drama of the mind, the drama of, you know, people who love to fight and to have arguments. There is a tremendous tendency to confuse action, emotion, and mental energy for bliss, for God energy. You've made a mistake. Pardon me for being rude, but you've made a misidentification. You have taken the very secondary energy and identified it as life. And it is not. It is secondary. And when you begin to slow down, you begin to feel life, capital L, that is pulsating all the moment in your awareness. And when you begin to touch that without the action, mind, and emotion overlay, you begin to come to what is called pure bliss, pure love, pure consciousness, pure awareness. And it's in that you find the happiness that you're looking for. It's in between words. It's in between thoughts. It's in between breath. One of the oldest yogic techniques for full God realization. In fact, if you did nothing but this for a few months, you might even get there, is to just spend, as you see, here it comes, right? Here it is. You spend all the time watching between the rising of the breath. Right after the rising of the breath, there is a natural space, not contrived. It's there. Because you don't really go, you really don't. You go, and then there's a space, and then there's a space. And the great yogis say, if you would just pay attention fully to that space that is naturally there after the in-breath and out-breath, God will show its face. What do they mean? They mean precisely what we're pointing to today. That it is that natural state between thought, between words, between breath, between motion. But if you're constantly in motion, and you will notice that many of you are, if you're not moving, then you're reading, or you're looking, or you're talking, or you're writing, or you're... And then, of course, if everything else fails, there's always thinking. And so it's an endless procedure of what I call the three secondary modes of energy. And they all come out of the primary mode of energy, which is the bliss. Now, do you really think that any of you are going to sit around for the rest of your life watching your breath? No, not a chance. No. Which is why we're here. Why are we here? Because that isn't possible for you.
No.
And it isn't what you want. Dear one, it isn't what you want. If you wanted it, you could do it. But you don't want it. We're here to tell you, in the moment of your marvelous life, yes, move. Do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. What matters is, whatever you do, become aware of it. Just my dear one, walk with awareness. I mean, don't, you know, you don't, none of you walk with awareness. You walk in your brain. It is your brain that goes walking, not your body. You have no idea if your feet are on the ground, if you're walking on hot concrete, cold pavement, what your shoes feel like. Most of you haven't a clue what your shoes feel like unless they hurt. Because you're not paying attention. You just, you're not, you don't walk in your feet, you walk in your brain. I told you this before, you mostly make love in your brain, you walk in your brain, you talk in your brain. You don't talk, you don't, not aware of how your face moves when you talk. You're not aware of how breath feels between words. You're not, all I'm asking is you just slow down and be aware of life as you're living it. You can move as often as you want if you move with awareness, much better than sitting in the same place the rest of your life unaware. And believe me, millions of people sit in the same room of the same apartment for their entire life, and they might as well be moving around the planet because nothing's happening. They're not aware of it all. They fill it with noise, action. I'm not saying I'm against action. Please, I hope I haven't given you that. I think we need to turn this heat off again, my friend. Thank you. It's simply to slow down in the midst of whatever. And not only will the whatever become exciting, but your action will be more easeful. Sweet lady, that is the modern life. That's called living in the fast lane. All we're asking is that you become so aware that those are secondary skills, and they come out of the basic energy field of bliss. And if you just get excited about bliss being your true nature, if you believe, even if a fragment of your awareness believes me, Cynthia, you're on your way. Because you will never forget it. And you've heard it before, now we say again. You will remember, in this moment is bliss. I'm miserable, in this moment is bliss. Oh, yeah? Well, where? I want to get you excited by this. Oh, where? That windbag said on Saturday in Sacramento, and look, then start looking. I would love it if you would all stand and say, I don't know, I'm going to take you on. I'm sorry, sir. I would love that kind of awareness that says, I'm going to disprove this. And spend a whole year looking for bliss to disprove it. Wonderful. I will take you any way I can. Angry, kicking, screaming. The only ones that I have difficulty with are the complacent ones that say, yes, dear, and never do anything about it. That is difficult for me. That, yes, dear, and that's it. In its deepest essence, meditation is nothing more than sitting down in the moment and experiencing whatever is there without any decision to get rid of and stop feeling what one is feeling, to create and begin. It's because you can fool yourself. My friends, you can fool yourself. All of you can fool yourselves. All that meditation is shutting up and allowing the moment exactly as it is without anything fancy, just sitting in it. And if there's pain, there's pain. Don't run away, just feel it. Feel your breath, feel everything, just sit, try not to move. Especially, you know, if you keep the same position, so let's say you meditate for half an hour. If you keep that same position without moving for half an hour, in spite of the twitches and you know, the nose starts, it is inevitable, isn't it? But if you, it's the rule, the nose begins to it. If you'll just hold it and not, and just watch the entire process, subject yourself to a half hour of just motionless observation, I cannot tell you how quickly the real big R, the true big T, the real nature of light and awareness begins to come forward. Look, The reason I'm asking for you to be simple is that the ego loves to get a hold of spiritual quest and turn it into the most outrageous drama for the ego that you can imagine. And it will put you back easier, longer, than just getting out there and doing all those bad things. Because when you're doing all those bad things, a part of you is going, you know, this isn't going to make me happy. But when you let the spiritual ego get a hold of you, and you know, everyone has one. Everyone has one. When you get into that, just laugh at yourself. Just laugh at yourself. And realize when you start telling about your great experience, if you're sitting at the breakfast table and you're talking about the great spiritual experience you had that morning, watch out. It's probably your ego that is talking. It is probably your ego that had the experience in the first place. So if you just learn to... Look, my friends, your true nature is so... ever-present, let me say this, and then we'll have a break so you can go for the business. Listen. This thing that you're seeking, that you think is so mysterious, so hard to find, so somehow unobtainable, is so ever-present, and ever being experienced, and ever manifested, that you have overlooked it. It isn't that you can't find it, it's you have overlooked it. It is the experience that you're looking for is the experiencer of everything that you experience in life. It is first cause, not secondary cause. You are looking for a secondary cause, and it is the primary cause that is constantly what you are. It is so ordinary. It is so immense. It is so ever-present that you have missed it. Because it is so much what you are, that you are so accustomed to it, that you never dream of questioning it, because it is so present. You see, you have been trapped, and I have helped trap you. And I regret that, in the sense that when any energy field holds out any kind of idea about being able to experience some deep states of awareness, instead of the entity realizing, the human realizing that that state is ever constant, the words have contrived to make them believe it's a future state. You see? And my words have done part of that damage. But I do not yet know how to communicate without the words, and so we take the risk, but it's a risk. I will state that your basic nature is bliss, and you are experiencing that bliss now, and the reason that you're not aware of it is that you are so intent on the belief that it isn't what you want. You believe because windbags have convinced you of these wonderful states, and in speaking of them, make them seem like a future thing. You say, but how do I communicate that without speaking in ways that make you think it's not present? You see, this is where the words end up being a bunch of nonsense. You know, we have, what, 2 years at the most for our worker. We're coming in on the end of it here, 2 years at the most. At the end, we'll be lucky if there's a handful of people out there, because there is tremendous resistance to believing what I just said, which is that this bliss that you are seeking is already being felt by a part of your energy now. Is it being felt by your mental, emotional, and physical body? Your physical body, yes. Your mental and emotional bodies, no. But there is a vast part of you that is constantly experiencing this. And so when you shut up and stop the thinking and stop the emoting and the traveling through your mind and just sit with the breathing and the simplicity of the growling stomach and whatever is going on, when you begin to do this, the natural state which the body is always feeling begins to be felt by your emotional being and your mental being. You begin to integrate. You become whole so that the conscious mind allows itself to be caressed by this energy, to allow itself to be experienced. So please, if you want bliss, I ask you to totally, seriously begin to state there is bliss ever present now. And then, with the simplicity of the natural, just breathe, hear, see, sit, walk, talk, think, but be totally aware of seeing, thinking, breathing, walking, talking. And my friends, in a relatively short time, if your focus is intense, you will know exactly what I mean. And as a secondary event, you will find your health improves because your body is relaxed and the cells are open to life. Your mental state relaxes because it hasn't been on overburn. You know, your minds are like those machines that have to go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They get hot. And your mental process, they're all overworked. And when you begin to move away from all of that into the breath of the moment, when you do go back to the mind, it is crystal clear with excitement and new ideas and new potential. And your emotions, when you cease to run the drama every moment, you reapproach an emotion in a whole new way. We'll talk. So what is the decision? This feeling, this experience, this awareness that you're looking for is either in the future, and you have to figure out how to get there, or it's in the present, and it's already being experienced. You have to decide.